Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, my name is Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to The Geek Show for another edition of Impossible Mission, the video game series stroke podcast in which we talk about video games in a way which might not make everybody happy. Let's just say that. So let's just lean into that. So if you're watching on YouTube, click subscribe, like, and comment below with some of your suggestions for the theme we'll reveal in due course. Or if you're on the social media, search for us at TGS_TheGeekShow on Instagram or Twitter, or TGS.TheGeekShow on Facebook, and you can have a chat with us there. All that out the way, to one side, it's business. What are we talking about this week, Rob?
Right, today we're talking about remakes. Right, now this is a big, huge, massive, gigantinormous topic. And I don't know why I said gigantinormous, but I think that's my word of the day.
It's just to stress how big it is. It's so big, a new word has been made up.
Yeah. See, everybody who's a gamer, everybody who's ever played video games has that game that you really want to see on a modern console. You probably played it 20, 30 years ago if you're that old. Or you played like some version of it that's on PSN or Xbox, whatever.
Well, let's just word it another way. If you've been playing games long enough, you get to the point where franchises just disappear. And then you'll think to yourself one day, where did that go? I'd like to see another one of them.
Yeah, you'd like to see another one of them, or you'd like to see that particular game remade. Now, this is coming off the back of things like Resident Evil being remade and Final Fantasy VII being remade and stuff like that.
There's a degree of that, but also when it's the passing of one generation to the next, you're kind of hopeful that some things will be rescued from the history vaults.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a reason why I mentioned Resident Evil, because we've got our own lists, right, of what we want to see remade. So I've mentioned Resident Evil, so I'm going to kick things off with Squaresoft, the then Squaresoft, their first 18-rated game and their first kind of shot across the bows of the Resident Evil franchise and Silent Hill at the time.
Okay.
Which was Parasite Eve.
You see, I remember the name of this, but it was just one of those sort of, it was present very much during the PlayStation 1 era, but I can't remember what it actually was.
See, this is the thing. Parasite Eve is one of those games where it successfully mixed in RPG elements with a horror storyline and an action gameplay. And the controls were a little bit easier on the eye and easier on the hands than the Resident Evil controls at the time.
I know this sounds like an incredibly vague comment, but did the lead have a red leather jacket? Am I remembering something else?
I think you're remembering Resident Evil.
No, it wasn't Resident Evil, it was something else of that ilk. It was a very popular era for survival horrors, though, let's be honest.
Yeah, but Parasite Eve only ever had three games, right? The first two were Parasite Eve 1 and 2, and the third one was called The Third Birthday, which came out on the PSP. And that's it, right?
Was that for success reasons? It only had three because it wasn't a successful franchise?
This is the thing, it wasn't a successful franchise because look at what it was going up against. It was going up against might of Silent Hill and Resident Evil. And this is the thing, a lot of Parasite Eve got swept under the carpet. But Parasite Eve, in a lot of ways, is actually, and you know, in a lot of ways, it's better as an actual game than Resident Evil was and than Silent Hill was. Okay, it wasn't the same in terms of atmosphere or anything like that. But in terms of storytelling, it was actually on par with the two of them. And in terms of actual game enjoyment, I preferred Parasite Eve 2 to games like Resident Evil 2 and Silent Hill 2.
I'm really going to have to go on a deep dive on YouTube about Parasite Eve because it's just, it's bouncing around in my memory and I can't quite picture it.
Well, this is the thing. The story, the game is about a character called Aya Brea, and she is a New York City police officer told over 6 days in Spain in 1997 as she attempts to stop the Eve, a woman who plans to destroy the human race through spontaneous human combustion, right? And yeah. then you get into all of the what the Parasite Eve actually means, because the game actually does relate to, you know, the title does relate to the things that are going on. And then you had, that was the first game, and then you had Parasite Eve 2, where it basically built on the first story and continued on with the adventures of Ayabrea. It was Squaresoft's first M-rated, 18-rated game, and it was the first major American and Japanese game development collaboration for Squaresoft as well.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Produced by Hironobu Sakaguchi and directed by Takashi Tokita. So it has.
You're totally not reading the Wikipedia page there.
No, I've got the Wikipedia page open, but
I know,
what I'm saying is you've got two actual, two of Squaresoft's head people at the helm of this project. Do you see what I mean? So you've got a lot of experience building this, and it, you know, it was critically very well received.
Okay.
Both Parasite Eve 1 and 2 were critically very well received. The third birthday, not as much.
In those days, critical acclaim didn't really mean much, did it?
No, critical acclaim actually meant more in those days than it does now.
No, I mean, today, to a degree, critical acclaim of certain types of game will translate to sales. Whereas then, if you were critically acclaimed, it didn't mean anything. It just meant you were critically acclaimed. There was no like guarantee of it like finding its audience.
No, well, that's what I mean. Critical acclaim back then actually meant more than it does now. Now, everybody's a critic. Okay, but back then...
No, that's not what I meant, but okay.
All I'm saying is that, yeah, okay, critical acclaim these days can translate into sales, but every game can be critically acclaimed. The reason why I say critically acclaimed is because back then we still had things like video game magazines and stuff like that.
Yeah, right? There's very few of them left.
But now, you know, every other website is a video games website.
Yeah.
And all of those people are critics, apparently. And so critical acclaim means less now than it did back when these games came out on the PlayStation 1.
Right, I think I'm going to pick up that baton, because I don't want you to turn this video into an old man's rant shouting at clouds.
I'm not shouting at clouds, I'm just saying, give us more Parasite Eve. Remake the first two Parasite Eve games, right? Because they are amazing games, and a lot more people should play them.
I fear my choices are going to basically be... drinking game fodder, because I fear like I mentioned these ones probably too much. I deviate a bit after the first two, but the first two are very much "we saw this coming, Rob, why'd you even bother to mention them" type titles. And the first one relates to EA's Extreme Sports range. Part of it went under the EA Big banner. SSX came under the EA Big banner. I can't remember who produced Skate, but let's just say for my first option, it's those two games, basically. But EA's Extreme Sports Wing.
When you say SSX, right, because Skate, I can understand, because Skate was kind of building on all of the other skateboarding games. Mm. But SSX, I have to ask, are you talking about a specific SSX game? Because I'll be honest, Tricky was the one that I really liked.
SSX 1 was kind of like a great proof of concept game.
Yeah.
It didn't have the sort of the visual panache that Tricky and Free had.
Yeah.
But it had the engine, and that was good.
Yeah.
Tricky.
Yeah.
Was kind of one of the most transcendent moments in gaming for me, because it was just a game which was... You know when you get a game and you think, wow, this is for me. This was made for me.
Well, I think SSX... Have you noticed how I honed in straight away on Tricky rather than any other title in the franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I'll stand up for SSX 3 as well, because that was kind of an evolution of Tricky. But after that, it kind of went... I think there was a few bits here and there on other formats, I can't recall. But the one which really put the nail in the coffin was... I can't remember what it was. I think it was on PlayStation 3. Mm. SSX on Tour, in which they tried to bring it back. However, it wasn't like the very visually flamboyant 1080 backflips and moves where you literally divorce yourself from the like explosions and colour and all this sort of stuff going on. It was like pure, the most pure arcade. It was basically Burnout for snowboarding games.
Yeah, and in the same way, you mentioned the PlayStation 3 version, Burnout Paradise was the nail in the coffin for the Burnout franchise.
Well, maybe not, but the point is... With SSX, they got rid of the heartbeat of what made that franchise. and it died.
Yes.
And I fear that sort of strategy is what killed the Extreme Sports game as well.
Well, the Extreme Sports games,
because they're trying to take it seriously is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, they made it. They made them simulations rather than actual games. And with Extreme Sports, you really want them to be games.
Yeah, you want SSX, not 1080 snowboarding.
Yeah, if I'm going to put it in terms of other sports, right? What you want to be playing is NBA Jam. You don't want to be playing NBA 2019 or whatever it is.
2K19, right?
2K19, whatever. You know, you don't want to play the sports simulation. You want to play the one where, you know, suddenly sparkles come out of your hands while you're, you know, a hang time of 6 seconds and then slam dunk the ball and shatter the glass.
In kind of a hard thing to explain with ball games, because I think ball games is a place that, like...
I'm just saying NBA Jam is well-known.
Yeah, yeah. Ball games are a bit more easy to make simulations out of. Whereas extreme sports, you are on a board, maybe with wheels, maybe with vault wheels, jumping off stuff and doing mad moves.
Yeah.
Treating that like a simulation is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There is signs that in the case of skate, there is people who are picking up the baton with sessions which have not heard anything for a while and Skater XL. But beyond that, maybe there's something. Maybe it's one of these things where indie's leading the charge in the same way that survival horror was reignited by the indie community. Maybe indie games do the same for extreme sports games. But I remain skeptical purely because the one that I really, really want, the one that my heart yearns for most is SSX to come back as it was.
Yeah. Speaking of extreme sports, right? Take a fighting game, take a normal fighting game, and basically tweak it and work on it and put it in a more of a 3D environment, give you objects that you can throw and make it a lot more fun, right? Just give it give it those jazz hands. And then you've got Power Stone, which is my next choice.
That was proto Smash Brothers, wasn't it?
It was Smash Brothers, I think, was out already by that point.
They're about the same time as each other, though, weren't they? Yeah,
but Power Stone, I have to say, if I had to choose between playing Smash Brothers and Power Stone, Power Stone wins.
Well, I think it's when you have too much of something, it gets kind of... Well, if you go to a convention, an anime convention, the one game that every single one will always have is Smash Brothers, so it kind of loses its power. For choice of words, but Power Stone, there was just two of them.
Power Stone 1 and 2, and then they did a kind of collected version on the PSP.
Yeah, it was a Sega franchise.
It had a bit of remastering when it came out on the PSP, but it was Capcom actually.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, it was Capcom, and it was Capcom and Eidos, if I remember rightly.
Oh, there's a name I've not heard in a while.
Yeah. Well, the main developer was Capcom, but I would love to see a remake of Power Stone for modern consoles because it has everything that anyone who's an aficionado of fighting games, anyone who plays like Guilty Gear, Xrd Rev 2, Street Fighter, whatever it is, or any of those games, and treats themselves as a serious player, would find a lot to love in Power Stone, right? I think Power Stone is one of those games where you can be a button masher or you can be a seasoned technical player and you'll still find a lot of things about the game that you will absolutely adore. The fact that it's a 3D environment rather than a 2D environment makes it a bit more difficult because positioning then comes into it rather than just, positioning in a 3D environment comes into it.
Yeah, they've never really cracked that. They've cracked the 2D plane. Fighting game, but outside of sort of your Tekkens and stuff like that, they never really cracked the 3D fighter.
Well, the most
they're all of the same type, aren't they?
Yeah, the most you can do in games like Tekken and Soul Calibur is sidestep. Whereas Power Stone, you could actually run away from your your opponent, run behind a pillar, right, while they're still trying to frantically attack you, grab a box or a table or something like that, throw it at your opponent, and then follow up with your own attacks.
It had bazookas as well, didn't it? And like weaponry.
And then you got the Power Stones and you became like super form. And then.
It was a fun game, you know. It has that sense of you're really in an arena, whereas it's just it's just set dressing for a lot of the Tekkens and the Soul Calibers. There's some levels which aren't that, but most of them are.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. That's why I'd love to see a new version of Power Stone.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go from one stage of being predictable to the ultimate stage of being predictable. Whenever I talk about something, whether it's TV shows, whether it's whatever, if it's something, a video game that could come back to life in some way, whatever form, it is always Dead Space.
Yeah, that is your other go-to response. Like that. That is your other go-to response. Dead Space 1 and 2 were brilliant.
Yeah, they're all-timers for me, like all-time great survival horror games.
Dead Space 3?
Yeah, no, because they turned it co-op and made it a shooter, basically.
Hang on, didn't we cover Dead Space 3 and there was that other one in the Frozen Planet?
There was a light gun one that was on the Wii that was transferred. I can't remember the name of it, but that was pretty damn good, I think.
Yeah, but what was that game that was set on a frozen planet?
I can't remember, but the point is, EA got dollar signs in their eyes, as they usually do, and just absolutely bamboozled the world with it. I believe it was a movie, like an animated movie, and a comic book series, and then they just sort of ground it to the fact they made as much money as they humanly possibly could within as short a time space as they possibly could, and they killed it with number 3.
Yeah.
But off the back of Resident Evil 2's success, and off the back of Star Wars, the recent Star Wars games that EA put out through, I can't remember the name, the people who made Titanfall, EA have learned that single-player games are alive, because they were always one of the biggest detractors or naysayers when they said single-player games are dead. It was always EA was at the front of that charge. And the fact that they've had one of their major success with a Star Wars game, and Resident Evil's over there have been a major success, I believe it's only a matter of time before EA start looking at Dead Space again. So as much as I would love it to happen, I honestly think it is going to happen. And sort of connected to that is Silent Hill. I don't want Silent Hills because I don't like first-person horror, but I think it's only a matter of time, on the same sort of levels and the same sort of principles, that Konami, whether it's through themselves or third-party who they're sort of license it out to, that Silent Hill comes back too.
See, this is the thing. I remember we had this conversation years ago, right? When Dead Space 3 came out, we also covered, at the time, Lost Planet 3, right?
That wasn't a bad game.
Yeah, I remember the discussion that I had with you about this. And although they came from two different developers and two different publishers, the point you made, I thought, actually does still stand true. What the people who made Dead Space 3 did, they basically made Lost Planet 3. And what the people who made Lost Planet 3 did, they basically made Dead Space 3.
Yeah, because, I remember Lost Planet 3 was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, if it was Dead Space.
Yeah. And the only problem with Lost Planet was it had that very big tell of arcade shooters where shoot the orange bit to hurt it.
Yeah, but as a Dead Space game, it would have worked fine.
Yeah. Bring back Lost Planet 2. There's a name I've not thought about for a long time.
So, yeah.
So what's your third one then, Rob?
My third one... when Metal Gear came out, when Metal Gear Solid came out, I should say, there was another game that kind of fell by the wayside, even though it had a plethora of releases on the PlayStation 1 and 2, and even on the PSP. This game franchise fell by the wayside, and everyone has been singing the praises of Metal Gear and the franchise for years and years and years, but I'll be honest, right? When you look at the storyline and the narrative of Metal Gear, it's kind of, all right, okay, this is basically a fantasy. This is basically a spy fantasy story.
It's badly translated spy fantasy because it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, but when you look at the storyline of a game like Siphon Filter, it's a lot more real world, right? Because Siphon Filter is my next choice. I would love to see a remake from the beginning of Siphon Filter all the way through, because Siphon Filter, right, you know how, Splinter Cell, right?
Yes.
Splinter Cell, I think, owes more to games like Siphon Filter than it does to games like Metal Gear, because Splinter Cell automatically got put in the same category as Metal Gear, stealth action game, yada, yada, yada. And everyone was saying, oh, yeah, it's a rival to Metal Gear, and I'm going... This has got more in common with Siphon Filter.
Metal Gear Solid is like a combination of James Bond and Escape from New York.
Yeah, whereas Siphon Filter was basically... what I loved about Siphon Filter was not just the gameplay, but the sheer range of equipment that you had access to. You had thermal goggles and night vision goggles. You had sniper rifles that these things could be equipped on, and normal assault rifles and normal handguns and various things like that. You didn't have... there was this wealth of choice as you were going through these massive areas on these missions, and you could basically go in all guns blazing or choose the stealth option if you wanted to. It wasn't forced on you. It was kind of a proto Splinter Cell, proto Deus Ex Human Revolution type game. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I would love to see, because there was Siphon Filter back in 99, and then you had number 2 and number 3, which came out in the years after. Then you had the Omega Strain in 2004 and Dark Mirror in 2006. And then the last in the series, which was Logan's Shadow, and that was 2007. And here we are now in 2020. And I think it'd be interesting to go back to the original Siphon Filter.
It's a Sony exclusive, isn't it?
It's Sony Computer Entertainment. It was... if I remember rightly, it was the Eidetic, who were the developers of it, who are part of Sony now. I think Sony bought them out.
Yeah, so they can bring it back. They've got all the... It's not obviously going to be the same people. That's like dream scenario when that happens. But no reason why they can't bring it back with a fresh new perspective.
Yeah, I think Siphon Filter is... and now that we're in an era where basically we're probably not going to see any Metal Gear Solid or any Metal Gear games for the foreseeable future.
Well, there was that story where rumour, heavily on the rumour, that Sony were wanting to buy Metal Gear, Silent Hill and Castlevania to do stuff with them, which is very ambitious. I don't think there's any truth in that rumour.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Because Konami know that they're sitting on... Konami basically have three geese that lay golden eggs.
They've got some of the most amazing franchises under their belt.
Yeah. Unless they're faced with liquidation, they're not going to get rid of those licenses. Right?
They'd license them out. That's what they'd do.
Yeah, those copyrights. They'd license them out, but they wouldn't sell the copyright for them.
No way. That would be incredibly foolish.
Yeah, that would be foolish. But yeah, Siphon Filter... Sony, you've got the rights to it already. Do it. You know you want to. Do it!
Problem with it, though, is... I don't know what it was called. Was it Syndicate? Where that was brought back and it turned it from a very isometric strategy game into a first-person shooter. That's my only worry with things like that.
Well, I mean, Siphon Filter was already a third-person action-adventure. You know, so that isn't really an issue. You can translate it fairly easily. The storyline is already there. You're just building on what's already there. And most of the stuff is already there to make this game.
Yeah. My number three, my third pick, is from a company which I don't have the longest history with, but the one time I did get a Nintendo console, one of my fondest times with it was with F-Zero X. Because, you know, I like races of that ilk. I love Wipeout and things like that. But as far as the franchises which Nintendo do, most of them are alive in some way, even if it's just like a character in Smash Brothers. But one which I felt like it could help bring in people who are a bit more sceptical and think of Nintendo as that company who makes kiddie games. Because that is a stigma which they have been stuck with for a very, very long time. Love them or loathe them, it is a stigma, and it's an unfair one.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you bring up F-Zero, because
F-Zero is one which could bring back in other people
outside
of the traditional Nintendo fan.
Well, F-Zero was one of those games where it was just off to the side doing its own thing, and people knew of it.
Was bloody amazing as well, F-Zero X.
Yeah, but I mean, in that vein, it was it's weird because it's a little bit like Wave Race in that respect, in that it doesn't get the attention it deserves.
No, nowhere near. Because Wave Race was very good too.
Yeah.
And, here we go. Was it Excitebike?
Yes.
Their motocross game? That's another one which was dead, which I pretend... Excitebike 64 was a good game from memory. But yes, I absolutely adore the F-Zero because it is just one of those pure arcade races which didn't have an overly stylized, cartoony colour palette. It could be played by anybody. It wasn't... It's just a gamer's game. I know I'm getting into... I'm bogging myself down at you with what I'm trying to say.
I understand what you mean. Don't worry about it.
But it's about branding. It's about the image that you put forward. And Nintendo have a... When people think of Nintendo, they think of Mario.
Mm.
They think of Zelda. They think of lush greens and double jumps and collectibles and power-ups and stuff like this. Whereas F-Zero is just a futuristic super speed racer. And it's one of the best ever examples of them. And to not do that, I think Nintendo are overlooking a sleeping giant. And I would love to see it return.
Excellent. Excellent. So, we've harped on enough about this. This is actually the first part of what we're going to do. So, yeah, you've got six games to choose from. We'll be back next time with the second part of this and with some honourable mentions in that one as well. So, look out for that. But in the meantime, let us know what you think. See if you can predict some of the ones that we're going to come up with in part two in the comments below.
Join us on Cinema Eclectica as we dive headfirst into the latest cinema releases from blockbuster monsters to the newest indie darling fresh off the festival circuit. Also on the show, we have Off the Shelf, where we talk about the latest films to hit Blu-ray and streaming. That covers everything from the Shaw Brothers to silent cinema, Czech New Wave to slashers, and New Hollywood to honest to God trash. Check out Cinema Eclectica wherever you find your podcasts, or direct from thegeekshow.co.uk.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters! I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show!
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Last week we talked about games we'd like to see return. Dead franchises. Maybe it's for next gen. Maybe it's just for whenever. It's just games you want to see come back from the void.
Yeah, but not simply a remastered version of the original game. An actual remake in the style of Resident Evil and Final Fantasy VII and games like that. And
I can remember the very early HD remasters. I remember the Silent Hill one. Was it on PlayStation 3?
Yeah.
Which was awful.
Yeah. Right, so I went first last time, so I think you should go first this time.
Just in case you missed the first part, what did you do last time? What did you cover last time?
What did I cover? Well, if you want to know, you can always watch the previous episode. But if you don't have the time, here it is. I chose for my first three, Parasite Eve, Power Stone and Siphon Filter.
Yeah, so my first three, I had SSX, Dead Space and F-Zero. Eclectic mix. Well, you went first last time, so we may as well keep it consistent.
So me first then?
You first.
All right, okay. Since you're forcing me, you're twisting my arm, I'm going to go with another fighting game, right? But this one was so very, very, very different.
Okay.
Bushido Blade.
That's one of those PlayStation 1... It's like Siphon Filter from last episode. It's just one of those names which is just bouncing around in my memory.
Right. Bushido Blade was different from pretty much every other fighting game. It kind of reminded me a little bit of a classic martial arts game from the Commodore Amiga era called Budokan. In certain ways, it reminded me of that. In other ways, it was basically the fighting game that I would love to see now. I would love to see it on a next-gen console. I'd love to see what they do with it, keeping some of the original mechanics. And see, the whole thing was, this was developed by Lightweight, and it was published by Square, right? By Squaresoft at the time. And Bushido Blade was different because they were one-on-one third-person battles, but the difference between other fighting games was that you didn't have any time limit or health gauge, which, and the fact that you don't have a health gauge makes it a little bit like victorious boxers in that respect.
So you got to judge the mannerisms and body language of your opponent.
The majority of hits would cause instant death, right? Whereas in normal fighting games, you have a health gauge. But in this, you're basically armed with swords and spears and stuff like that. And if you hit someone just right, you could basically kill them outright. It was possible to wound an opponent without killing them. And you also had this thing called a body damage system, so you could physically disable each other in increments, a bit like... But the other thing was, you had like 8 weapons to choose from. Katana, Nodachi, Longsword, Sabre, Broadsword, Naginata, Rapier, and Sledgehammer. But here's the...
Sledgehammer?
Yep, Sledgehammer. Sledgehammer is basically a weapon of war as well. But here's the thing, right? Even though each weapon had like a realistic-ish weight, length, that sort of thing, one of the things you could do during the fight, see, it was all about Bushido, it was all about honor during combat. And I think For Honor is kind of following on a little bit from Bushido Blade.
It seems a bit more arcadey.
For Honor is more of an arena combat thing. This is basically one-on-one. And what I'd love to see is this version of Bushido Blade come back, because one of the things you could do, you could literally throw dirt in your opponent's eyes.
You see, everything you've said, it points to one of the big holes in the fighting game market, because it's all very arcade.
Yeah.
Whether that's hyper gore or cartoony over embellishments and excess. But honest to God, realism isn't really in the fighting game space.
Yeah.
That's a game that could fill it.
Yeah, but the thing is, some of the characters have like a sub-weapon you could throw. You had a choice of 6 playable characters, and each one had like different levels of strength, speed, that sort of thing. And everyone had their own special attacks. The story mode, though, was where you could do certain things. You know, certain moves and certain tactics were considered dishonorable, like throwing dirt in your opponent's eyes, striking a foe from the back, stuff like that, right? Because before the fights, they bow to each other. If you attack while they're bowing, right, that's also dishonorable, and that actually affected how the story progressed.
That's interesting.
So that was another interesting addition to it.
How many games did it have?
If I remember rightly, there was only, was it just the one game? I can't remember.
I definitely remember Bushido Blade.
Yeah, I think it was just the one game.
That's a disappointment. I think maybe the time might be right for it now, because there is like a case with all of these games that they were just the right game at the wrong time.
Well, I mean, there was a second game.
But still, that point still stands. There is a case of these things that it is the wrong game, or the right game at the wrong time.
Yeah, but the thing is, there was actually something that came out later on that was related to Bushido Blade. And it was also developed by Lightweight, and it came out on the PlayStation 2. Do you remember Kengo Master of Bushido?
Not really.
Right. Kengo Master of Bushido was kind of a related title. It had similar gameplay to Bushido Blade. And I think Kengo kind of developed into... it kind of evolved in a little bit into games like Way of the Samurai.
Oh, yeah, I remember Way of the Samurai. I really enjoyed that franchise. It wasn't very good, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yes, so I pick up that baton, and it's actually connected in a funny way.
Really?
Yes. Currently, Team Ninja are working on their critically acclaimed Neo series, which is sort of an Onimusha take on the Dark Souls Bloodborne formula of incredibly hard, incredibly punishing, sort of finding the pattern of the bosses and beating them, even though they can off you in one shot, collecting souls, yada, yada, yada. I can recite all the tropes. But as far as the ones which aren't done by Front Software, Neo is one of the better ones.
Yeah.
But what they got their name from was Ninja Gaiden. Ninja Gaiden Black was the original on... Was it the original Xbox or was it the 360?
Well, Ninja Gaiden Black wasn't the original. The original was...
No, I mean there's original, but the original of the second wave.
Yeah. See, Ninja Gaiden Black was basically the ultimate version of that Ninja Gaiden. And I think it was on the Xbox One was Ninja Gaiden Black, because you couldn't get it on PS3.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, Its story was about Ryu Hayabusa, and he had a series of buxom Kunoichis, or female ninjas, and he went to fight a monster man who was doing monster man things, which is fine, I guess. But it's the type of game which Devil May Cry or Bayonetta is. However, its combat is some of the... it got chills. It's some of the best...
Ninja Gaiden is probably... See, Ninja Gaiden is... wasn't it originally like a platform game?
Yeah, it was like a 2D... I think Shinobi was of a similar ilk as as Ninja Gaiden was.
But Shinobi got a remake on the PS3. The PS2.
Yeah, it wasn't a good remake.
It wasn't a good remake, but...
But there's a history for Ninja Gaiden to come back, because it already has once. But its combat was so good. It's like some of the greatest combat that's ever been put in a game.
I'm trying to think. All those things that people love about games like Devil May Cry and Bayonetta, I think Ninja Gaiden basically did better.
I think it went to number three. Number three was a rubbish game, but still, that combat.
Yeah.
It was so buttery, beautiful stuff. And I think, it's fine that Team Ninja are doing Neo. It's working for them. It's probably more successful than Ninja Gaiden was. But at the same time, Ninja Gaiden is just, it's some of the best combat that I've ever played. And I can't really make a better case for something to return than having some of the best stuff that I've ever played.
I've got to ask a question, right? Ninja Gaiden, right?
It wasn't as good when you were playing as a female ninja. Just to stress that. But when you were playing Ryu, it was... Whoa, chills. But go on, your question.
My question is, Ninja Gaiden is developed by Team Ninja, yeah?
Yes.
So how the hell... who's the developer of Dead or Alive?
Yeah, it's a very complicated company, that one, isn't it?
Tecmo, isn't it?
Yeah, because Tecmo, it's all under Tecmo. And Team Ninja is a part of Tecmo.
Yeah,
but... And Dead or Alive is also done within a different wing of Tecmo.
Oh, should I say Koei Tecmo, as they are
That's
now.
What they're called now, yeah.
Yeah, so, because Ryu Hayabusa... appears in Dead or Alive.
That's where he started life, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think...
Well, no, he didn't. He started originally in the original Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah,
he
but
was
then...
3D-ized in Dead or Alive, and then he got his own game.
Yeah, and it's always seemed puzzling to me that Ryu has his own game, but the rest of the characters in Dead or Alive don't.
It's actually, as far as games characters having their own franchise, it's probably the most successful. Because I remember, what was that, Nina from Tekken had that Death by Degrees, which is awful. And beyond that, I can't remember any.
I'll tell you something, right. I know Death by Degrees gets slated a lot of the time by everybody. And in some ways, rightly so. But,
yeah.
but, right. And I've always felt that this is truly...
Nina Williams, that's what was her name, yeah. Nina Williams.
I've always felt that this is truly a shame. The fact that nobody ever took the actual control mechanics for the game, the actual fighting control mechanics, and tried to do something with that, because the control mechanics were really interesting. And if somebody out there looked at Death by Degrees and thought, hang on, because I did, and if I was a games developer, I'd be looking at those control mechanics and saying, hang on, so you're using the twin sticks for all of this, for movement and combat, right? Rather than, and you can basically, if you include the trigger buttons with the twin sticks, then what you have, if you can basically get the animations and get the coding right, you could have possibly the most flowing combat in a fighting game that's ever been made.
Yeah, it goes back to what I said earlier, though, wasn't it? Right game, wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, I think... that particular control mechanic is something that really people should be looking at now, as just because if you think about it, if you don't need to button mash, if you don't need to move and button mash and stuff like that, but you could use the twin sticks instead, you've got a lot more flexibility. The twin sticks move, yeah. But then you could use the two trigger buttons and your third finger, right, your ring finger on both hands, for buttons, because people have those triggers underneath now, don't they?
Yeah, once upon a time, the first-person shooter wasn't done with twin sticks. There was a time before that.
Yeah, but now...
And it revolutionised the genre, so who says this couldn't do the same for fighting games?
And that's why I'm saying...
interesting gambit there. Very interesting gambit.
So, Anyway, moving on to...
But that was Ninja Gaiden. Yeah. Bring back Ninja Gaiden. It rocks.
My next choice. And I had to go with it. It's a game that unfortunately got overshadowed by a lot of the other JRPGs of the PlayStation 1 era. It came out in 1999, unfortunately. So it was towards the end of the life of the PlayStation. And that's the truly tragic thing about this game, because it is a great game. It had some amazing graphics. It's just sad that this... And Sony have the rights to this. Again, Sony, you have the rights to this. Mm. Bring back a remake, a new, totally new envisioning of The Legend of Dragoon.
This is the all-too-common tale of this era of JRPG, because the PlayStation 1 is the best JRPGs that ever been, and there were so many of them.
Well, you say that, but...
It was the tail end of how the best it has ever been.
Yeah.
I'd say sort of like, SNES to PlayStation 1. That sort of window was JRPGs with a biz.
You had so many good ones. There wasn't just the Final Fantasies. There was Sakura Tyson. There was Legend of Dragoon. You had Grandia. You had Jade Cocoon. You had Ark the Lad, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross, Xenogears.
PlayStation 2 was good enough, but it just wasn't that.
Yeah. But Legend of Dragoon, you take on the role of Dart, the protagonist. He's heading home from a 5-year-long journey to pursue a black monster that killed his parents and destroyed his home city of Neat, which is also spelled the way you think it's spelled. It is spelled N-E-E-T, which I always found hilarious because Neat...
Was that an in-joke?
I think it was an in-joke because Neat literally means not in education, employment or training.
Which probably is the biggest audience for these games.
But anyway, you...
I say that with all the love in the world, by the way.
Yeah. The thing I loved about The Legend of Dragoon is that you basically were immersed in this story, and it was 4 discs. It was expansive, and yeah, okay, the storyline was a little bit clunky in parts, but hell... What storyline for a JRPG wasn't clunky in parts for that time?
Well, show me any game which is over 50 hours where the game, well, story even, doesn't get clunky at some point. It just doesn't exist. There is no game.
Exactly.
Like that. It just doesn't happen.
It was a beautiful game for the PlayStation 1. Beautiful game for the PlayStation 1, right?
And not Panzer Dragoon, so just let's make that stress. It's not the one where you ride dragons.
Yeah, but
That was a Sega game.
I would love to see a remake of Legend of Dragoon, and I think that the time is ripe for a remake of Legend of Dragoon.
Yeah, my last one is another one of these. If you know me, I'm never more than 30 minutes from discussing it or boring people about it, whichever way you want to look at it. And it is Time Splitters. It was put up by Free Radical, and I believe Free Radical were consumed into Crytek, who do Crysis.
Yeah.
Anyway, it had a story, Time Splitters. It was Time Splitters 1, Time Splitters 2, and Time Splitters Future Perfect. It was a game mostly built around the multiplayer. It was brilliant, brilliant multiplayer. The thing which made it is kind of a precursor to Overwatch. Very, very characterful multiplayer game in which you could play things as diverse as butlers to monkeys to all sorts, really. Dinosaurs, time travelers, because that's the whole thing. Time Splitters, the concept is you are people from all sorts of eras of time throughout history, and you all jumped in a multiplayer arena and shot some guns. And there's not much more we can really say about it, to be honest. But I think as far as the way the landscape is and the environment of the character shooter, well, I don't know whether it wouldn't have been, but it certainly led the way for Fortnite and Overwatch, Time Splitters.
Yeah.
And it's just incredibly fun to have a game where you can say to your friends, you can't play as the monkey because the monkey is cheating. And you have them sort of like game rules, like unspoken rules of being a part of this multiplayer community, which is very, very eccentric and very unique and very smooth gameplay. Because I believe some of the people who worked on it worked on the shooters for Rare in the N64, so like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. So as far as of that era shooters, it was one of the best, absolute best. But unlike what shooters have become, divorcing like those ones I mentioned earlier, Overwatch and Fortnite, sorry. Most shooters now are super serious.
Yeah.
This isn't. And it led the way for the colourful ones. And I can't really... I'm repeating the same point now, but I think it's just the time might be right to bring it back. There was talk about it coming back a while ago, but that died down. But still, I think there's never a good... never a bad time to bring it back, because it's just one of those evergreen titles, basically.
Yeah. So, my last one then, yeah? So, I'm going to go far, far back into the depths of time, into the mists of PC and Amiga and SNES and Sega gaming and even the 3DO. And I'm going to go back to a war that was fought across the stars between the humans and the Kilrathi.
No idea.
Origin Systems came up with a game, right? Back in, I think it was 1990, on the and it was released for MS-DOS. And it was a game that would literally change the entire shape of space combat games, right? It would change it all. Because up until then, you had games like Elite and stuff like that. And the game that Origin Systems released was Wing Commander.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Wing Commander, quite literally, right, what it did, it forced LucasArts to change their Star Wars games and to actually give them a new look. So that's how you ended up with, like, the X-Wing games and the TIE Fighter games, right? From LucasArts.
They don't make them anymore, do they?
No, they don't. Wing Commander is basically a dead franchise, and I would love to see Wing Commander make a return, because the original Wing Commander games were, for the time, amazing. You basically had, right, and this was the cockpit view. The cockpit was basically, you know, in Battlestar Galactica, where you have, where you saw the flight stick and everything like that. The cockpit was basically flight stick, and you had these big areas where you had your radar and you had your weapon systems and stuff like that. And you had just these windows that you could look out of. So you had a very narrow field of view. It wasn't like a first-person view, which a lot of the games tend to go with now. And
the Gears Combat, yeah.
Yeah, and I always thought having that narrow field of view added a lot more tension to it, because you couldn't see below you. You had to use your radar. You had to use your sensors. You had to
Are you Dark Souls-ing this?
I'm not Dark Souls-ing this. I'm saying that why would a Dark Souls game that was already tough to play long before Dark Souls?
No, you know what I mean? Like, the difficulty is why people love Dark Souls, and you're saying the same for that. That's all. I'm just drawing a weird coming
out
of there.
I'm sorry, but as an older gamer, I think that that argument is stupid.
Okay.
And I'm saying that and spelling stupid as in S-T-O-O-P-I-D, just for emphasis, right?
It's not the hardest game I've ever played. That's still Ghouls and Ghosts.
Yeah, it's seriously. The reason for a game to be popular is because it's difficult. Get over yourself.
Let's move past that. I was just baiting you.
Yes, and successfully as well. Look, Wing Commander is one of those games where, if I remember rightly, Wing Commander had you had Wing Commander and then the Secret Missions, which was kind of an expansion. Then you had Wing Commander 2 and Wing Commander 3. And even Wing Commander 4, which came out in 1996, right? Wing Commander 3 was one of my favorites because it was basically Privateer. And it was, you were basically like, that was the Han Solo game.
Oh, well, there you go, yeah.
That's why that was my favorite. And that was from 1993. But Wing Commander, I think the final nail in the coffin for Wing Commander was when they did that stupid movie with Freddie Prinze Jr.
That'd kill any franchise.
But, you know, that was in the past. That's happened. We don't talk about that. Moving on to actual Wing Commander itself. Oh, and I forgot Super Wing Commander, which was a drastic new look at the events of the original Wing Commander, which came out on, like, the 3DO.
Yeah. I mean, given that EA have discovered that Star Wars games can be successful if you actually put effort in.
Yeah.
Who knows? This might be one they want to pull back out, along with Knights of the Old Republic, maybe. Well,
the reason why I'm saying Wing Commander, right? See, this is the thing. Elite has a remake, right? They've done a new game called Elite Dangerous, which is actually pretty good. In fact, pretty amazing. I'll be honest, Elite Dangerous is very, very good. And if they can do that with Elite, think of what they can do with all of the wealth of material that they've got for Wing Commander. Because let's be fair, Elite and Elite 2 weren't the most high-end games. Wireframe graphics, a randomized planetary system, and it was basically the granddaddy of all space games, right? Wing Commander 2 has all of this stuff already there to build on.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, and I bet all of the viewers did not expect Wing Commander to make it to this list.
I didn't, to be honest. But it's nice that it did.
Yeah, we've got some honorary mentions, though.
Yes, I'll run through mine first.
Okay.
Shin Megami Tensei.
Okay, which one?
Otherwise known as Mega Ten, because that's Persona made a lot of money for that company, and Shin Megami is what they did before Persona, or during Persona as well.
Right, yeah.
And Persona 4 and 5 have been so incredibly successful that I think it's afforded them the opportunity to sort of dust off a few of their old Shin Megami games.
Because I thought all of these were actually part of Shin Megami Tensei. I thought
they've dropped the Shin Megami Tensei thing.
And it's just right.
Klonoa, which is a very popular Ooh. With many people.
Good call. 2D
platformer with bubble mechanics.
Good call.
Ape Escape.
Really?
It's just one of those dumb arcade games, isn't it, where it has no hook, you just go and catch some apes that have escaped.
I have to be honest, I did not expect you to say Ape Escape.
It's just fun. It's just pure, non-pretentious fun.
Yeah.
Onimusha, I was completely swung by the reissue of the first one. I thought that was sort of like the precursor to them doing the new one.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. Either it isn't. Either way, I want to see Onimusha back. The one fighting franchise that I got behind ever was Bloody Roar. In which it was just the 2D, sort of 3D model fighter in which you fought with other people, but you had like a beast mode in which you turned into a very exaggerated animal and you fought each other. I think there was three of them. It was on PlayStation 1. Probably wasn't that successful because it just went away, but I adored it and I would love to see that back because it could pull me back into fighting games.
Yeah.
And the last one is probably not going to ever happen because it was owned by Midway and it was one boxing game that I adored and it was very arcade and very fun, but Ready to Rumble.
Yes.
And there's some that I'd like to see back. I could probably have about 40 of these things because there's been so many games that went away, but these are the ones that really stick out for me.
I think Ready to Rumble, I think that's a really good choice. I would love to see that game make a comeback. For me, right at the top of my honourable mentions, and I had to take it off the list because I thought Wing Commander was more important not that it's more worthy of a remake, but more due a remake that because this game had a remastered version that came out on the GameCube, Skies of Arcadia. I would love to see a new version of Skies of Arcadia, if possible. And on the back of that, games like Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, I'd love to see remakes of those. One game that I would love to see them just totally redo and revamp and remake, and I know it had a remastered version that came out on iOS in 2009, and there were plans for a sequel. That was supposed to come out on Apple Arcade last year, but still has no release date at the time of this recording anyway. Beneath the Steel Sky.
Yes.
Now, I can't impress upon you just how good a point-and-click adventure this game is. I mean, we're talking 1994, cyberpunk, science fiction, point-and-click, developed by Revolution Software, and it's now, right, you can get this game for free on GOG.com, right? So if you want to play it, go to GOG.com, download it for your PC, play the game. You will not regret playing this game, and you will join me in wanting a remake of this game because the game has the world is so rife for exploration. It's the kind of world that Deus Ex built later on. It's that kind of world that kind of environment that Deus Ex built as well. And you could see very easily Beneath the Steel Sky and Deus Ex kind of being kind of overlapping in certain ways.
That's interesting.
You know, Beneath the Steel Sky is one of those games where you just go, that's amazing. I did not expect to enjoy myself as much as this. Penultimate one that I'd love to see a remake of is a classic sword and sorcery fighting action game, Gauntlet.
There's another icon of games of yonder.
Because Gauntlet did have a couple of games that came out on the PlayStation 2, which weren't very good, but I think Gauntlet is one of those games where I don't think it'd get old.
It's evergreen.
Gauntlet actually might have had a game on the PC in the last few years. I'm not sure. Possibly. And if it did, then, you know, don't stress. I can't remember if it did, but Gauntlet Legends is the one that I'm actually specifically focusing on here. And the last one, and I'm going to go back to horror. These games came out on the PlayStation 1 and also on the Dreamcast for the second game, right? Nightmare Creatures.
I thought you were going to go with, for a moment, I thought you were going to go with the one survival horror that Nintendo did. But no, that's not one I've heard of.
Which survival horror did Nintendo do?
I should look it up while you're talking.
Right. Nightmare Creatures is it's more of an action-oriented game than Resident Evil and things like that, right? It's basically gothic horror, right? And it's set in... The story begins in 1666. Devil-worshipping cult called the Brotherhood of Hecate, conducting sinister experiments in London and take over the city. And so you have to roam the streets of London fighting against these superhuman powers. And it's grotesque monsters, and it ends up in the First Great Fire of London. Then the game itself takes place in 1834. This is after London has fallen victim to several evil occurrences. And you basically have to go around. It's a single-player game. And you take control of one of two characters, either Ignatius or Nadia. Nightmare Creatures is one of those bizarre games that you don't expect it to be as good as it is, but it is as good as it is.
I remember those days when you had those stealth classics.
Yeah, because this game came out on the PlayStation, the PC, N64. I think it was re-released for mobile as well. But Nightmare Creatures 2 was the one where it really kind of took off its clothes and ran around naked and said, look at me.
It did a Suda 51, did it?
Yeah.
But that sounds good. The Nintendo first survival horror that I was trying to think of was Eternal Darkness.
Oh, Sanity's Requiem. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to mention.
Well, actually... See, I forgot about that one, but Eternal Darkness could do with the remake as well.
Yeah.
Damn it. There's far too many games. We'll have to revisit this at some point in the future.
Just look through Nintendo's archive of things that this didn't and just dropped, because there's some amazing stuff in there. Some amazing stuff. But anyway, that is it for this episode of Impossible Mission. I hope this sort of thing is helping with the self-isolation. But until next time, thank you for listening, or thank you for watching, and... we'll see you next time.